all from Las Vegas.
First of all, I want to thank Keith and Sue for inviting me to come and speak to a lot of my friends and see a lot of my friends that some of them I haven't seen in a while. And I'm grateful to the program. I started doing the things most of us do when I was 9 years old on the streets of Long Beach, California. And it just progressively got worse. I was raised by the state of California till the last time I got out of the penitentiary was 1972. So from 9 years old, which would have been 1955 till 72, I went in and out. As a juvenile, I went to the juvenile authorities and then and on up. So I'm not going to give a big drug log or what I did. We all know what we do. So what I want to really talk about is when I was new. I was in a rehab center in the city of Orange, a place called the Care Unit. And I had a little job, and the foreman kept telling me, "Joe, if you got a problem, there's a place where you can go that our insurance will pay for it. You can get some help." And I would say, "No, I ain't got no problem. I just have a hard time getting to work on Monday morning." And usually my work week started on Tuesday or Wednesday. And they didn't take too kind to that. But anyway, I had been married my ex-wife had custody of my two boys, my two sons, and they lived. They moved back to Michigan, and I was out here in California running amok. The end of the school year, 1979, my boys came out to spend the summer with me, and they never went back. When the summer was over and they were supposed to go back, my ex-wife didn't want them back. So I was stuck raising two little boys. It didn't stop me from doing the things that we do. And it continued on until I went in that rehab center. And the way I got there was I came to about 2:30 in the morning. And July in California is warm, but for some reason the furnace was on in our apartment. I had a little two bedroom apartment in Fullerton, and I came to and I seen no way out. I was hopeless. I wanted to stop, but I couldn't stop. I tried and tried and tried. And the thought come to my head that my sons were going to be raised by the state of California, foster homes and all those things that some of us go through, the same way I was. And I didn't want that to happen. So the thought came to my head was, I had a little sawed-off 12-gauge shotgun, double-barrel shotgun that I had nicknamed Petey, that I pulled armed robberies with. And the thought came to my head that warm July morning that I would kill my sons in their sleep so they wouldn't feel nothing. And then I killed myself. I had given up. And I remembered what my foreman told me at work. So I called his house. And I told him what was going on and what I had almost done. And he says, I'll call you back. Give me 10 minutes. I'll call you back. He called the plant I worked in and got a hold of the, I don't know what they call it today, that takes care of people that have to go to the hospital and all those things. And then he called me back and says, we got a place where you can go. Our insurance covers it. I'll be there at a half hour. I said, whoa, wait a minute. I got two little boys that I'm raising by myself. I got to have find somebody to take care of them, make sure they get to school and are fed. And he said, well, how long will it take? I said, give me a few hours. I got a neighbor lady lived in a couple of apartments down from me, Sigel, older woman, older than I was at the time. And she agreed to do it. I told her what I was going in the hospital. I'd be gone for 30 days or so. She took my boys and I went to a rehab center. And I found out the disease that I have. And I called my mom and dad. And I told them where I was at and what had happened. And they couldn't take care of my boys. So I asked the lady to keep them until I got out. And she said she agreed to. And I was introduced to AA and NA in there. My therapist was a female. And prior to going in this rehab center, I females to me were, I treated them and thought of them as a piece of meat, property. And, because that's the kind of people I hung out with. And my therapist was a female. And her name was Penny Hendricks. I can say that now because she's since passed. But, Penny had, I believe, 13 years at the time. And for the first time that I can remember, I listened to a female share her innermost feelings. And she told me her story. And she also broke her husband's anonymity and told me about Chief, her husband, who I got to meet. But I believe this woman, to come from where she had come from to where she was at there, a drug counselor, therapist, I seen a ray of hope, put it that way. And I listened to her, and we had these, when I first got there, we had these little group meetings. There was 8 or 9 of us in a group, and me being a gangster and a tough guy and a biker and all that crap, I kept my mouth shut and didn't say nothing, didn't react. But when I was with my therapist, just her and I could talk to her. And I didn't feel ashamed because I had heard her story. And that's how it started for me. That's when I finally got a ray of hope that there might be something here. I might be able to make this. Make a long story short. 3 days before I got out of that rehab center, there was a AA meeting down at Hogue Hospital, Newport Beach. And they took us to the speaker meeting. It was a speaker, big hall with probably 200-300 people in there. And the speaker, when they introduced me, he come up on the stage, big elevated stage. We're looking up at him. And they introduced the speaker. And the man spoke about what happened to him, what he had done. He spoke about feelings, shared feelings with us in a total room of strangers. And I identified with a lot of the things that he talked about and the feelings. So when a meeting was over, before the tech would hustle us off to them white vans, to take us back to the rehab center. I asked him if I could go talk to the speaker. And he said, yeah, he let me do that. So I went up and introduced myself to Keith. Told him I was in a rehab center. I'm getting out in 3 days. And they told me I need to get a sponsor. Someone I can talk to and will help me. And the first thing out of Keith's mouth was what my drug of choice was. I said, heroin. He says, you ain't going to make it. He said, very few of you ever make it, especially at your age. And he said, but he reached in his coat pocket. He had a sports coat on like I have tonight, except it was country western. It was cut western. And reached in there and got out one of his cards, and he give it to me. It was two hands shaking hands. And it said, together we can make it. Keith D. and the phone number. He says, when you get out of that rehab center, you call me. 3 days later, I got out, come home, and I called him, and I got his answering machine because he was a productive member of society. He was working, and I told him I was at home. And anyway, when he got home, he called me, and he said, I'm going to send one of my sponsors. The judge had taken my driver's license away for a year, and he said, I'll send one of my sponsees over to get you. So he sent one of his sponsees over, who's not here today. And I believe he's still alive, but he's not here. He found God and went the religious way. He sent Billy over to get me, and they took me back to Keith and Sue's house. He took me back to Keith and Sue's house. And I met Sue for the first time, and there was a little girl, a little teenage girl there, Simone. And there were six guys, talking in the driveway. And anyway, I got to meet him. Out of those, I think there's, counting Keith, there's four of them in the room. Counting me, there's four of us tonight that are still here, but... That's how it started for me. I asked Keith to be my sponsor, and he's been my sponsor for 28 and a half years. My sobriety date's July 22nd, 1983. And I've been in the prisons, like I said, and seen the head doctors and all that. None of that never worked. None of it. And I've, over the years, I've come to realize that there's nobody that knows us better than another one of us in recovery, irregardless of what your program is. It doesn't make any difference to me. So who better to help than us? Help each other. I remember, Sue, Keith's wife, was kind of leery about me. Because, you know, she found out I was an ex-carny and we legally steal money from you. And all them hustles and all that kind of stuff. I knew how to do that well. And so she didn't really trust me. And, you know, I was a heroin addict and, you know, it was just things like that. I like to say today, though, that I know she loves me and trusts me and I love her. She means a lot to me. Sue, and she still doesn't, I know, was sponsoring a lot of women. And back then in the 80s, we called it date night for lack of a better way. And some of us guys that was single, with some of her sponsees, that was single, we go to the movies, go bowling, do something together, you know. And that's all it was, just to have fun. And that's how I learned from Sue and her sponsees how to treat a woman, how to talk to them respectfully and not like a piece of meat. The women in these rooms did that. What taught me to be a man, to learn how to be a man, was you guys, the men in these rooms, my sponsor first. And then I began to listen to other men doing this deal. And I'm fortunate I'm blessed. I've never relapsed, even though I heard something it's been two or three months ago, someone had questioning about, well, how do we know you haven't been getting loaded, because you haven't been here with the dog or as much in California. And you don't know, but I know. And I haven't. I've been involved. I got a job, a new job, paid a lot more money, and that's all through this program. I learned how to be responsible, and instead of getting them instant loans, robbing people, I did what I swore I never wanted to do, and that's pay Uncle Sam a bunch of time card. And I got blessed with a good job, and I traveled all over the United States. The company I work for sent me all over the United States doing power plants and shutdowns and all this. I learned the millwright trade, and that's what I did until I retired. But I want to say this, whatever state I was in whatever city I was in, I always called the hotline to find out where the meetings were. And if I wasn't working 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, I went to a meeting. Nobody else on my crew, was involved, so I always went alone. And I didn't have to find a ride. They always send somebody to pick me up, take me to the meeting, and bring me home. And that was beautiful. So I met a lot of people. I can't remember their names now, but I, through the years of doing this, I've met a lot of people, and when I see them, I recognize their face, but not their name, and that's okay. My mind's gone. My long-term memory's gone. Most of it's gone. I still remember here, the first time I came here. It was called Cahuilla in 84, and fond memories. That's always stuck out in my mind. And today, I want to get on with what's happening with me today. Today I'm a happy man. I'm content in my life. My favorite movie of all time, maybe this will help you understand where I'm coming from. My favorite movie of all time is Pay It Forward. Everybody see that movie? In case you didn't know it, that was written by a lady that's in the program. She's got 27 or 28 years sober. I found that out because I investigated, because it was my favorite movie. And I just knew that whoever wrote that, script writer or whatever, someone in their family or they were in the program, in a 12-step program. So I've dedicated my life after I retired. I retired 4.5 years ago. I dedicated my life to paying it forward. That's all I want to do. That is my life. I don't have any big deals going on today except for me to get a day being the best me that I can be and not hurt another human being. And that was not the man I was when I got here. I can't give enough thanks to Keith, my sponsor, and Sue, his wife. And I got to see, it was beautiful. I got to, Simone came out here with her children, last year. And, we got to take them to Circus, them, all them games and carny games down there. We got them some stuffed animals and stuff. It was neat. And, I hadn't seen her in years and years. I went to a camp out with a dog last summer, and I got to take my dog here, Nate, with me, and he loved it. And we got to come here for this, which is beautiful. You know what, the type of people we were before we got here, we're not supposed to be here, and many of us wouldn't be in the same room. But we love each other. We care about each other. We respect each other. And I'm a firm believer in that. I probably go overboard on that because that's not the type of person I was before I got here. So I overemphasize that, to love another human being, irregardless of where they're from or what they've done. And that was all taught here, mostly at the dog and with my sponsor. Always knew when Keith was upset with me, or he'd suggest something to me or tell me something, because back then we used to tell him, this is what we, you either do this or it's all on you. But when he was really wanting to get a point across to me, he'd lock his finger and in my chest and say, listen, Ace, I don't know what the hell you're doing or what you're thinking, but here, this is what we do. So I took that as, you either do this or your ass out. And I'm grateful that that's the kind of sponsor I had to have, because if he would have been a suit, and I have nothing against suits, if he had been an executive or whatever, if he wasn't tough, I'd have probably walked over him, or I'd have never listened to him, and I wouldn't be here today. I know times have changed. They don't do that no more. Now they pat them on a poo-poo and tell you, keep coming back, everything will be all right. Back then, you either did it or you're gone. Because he used to tell me, there's someone waiting for your seat, buddy. Today I try to stay, like he says, I try to stay in the trench and not... You know, the road, the longer you're here, the road gets narrower. But over the years, I've learned to drive a little straighter, so I don't veer off as much or as often as I used to. And that's a good thing. I'm a human being. I still make mistakes. There's actually only two things that I have done successfully 100% since... I asked Keith to be my sponsor, and that is I have not relapsed, and I've never laid down with a newcomer, female. I haven't because I used to use women, so I go overboard on that. I don't do it, and I don't tolerate anybody that has asked me to be their sponsor do it. I can't have it. These were taught to me. You hear what I'm saying? I was 37 years old when I was introduced to Keith, Sue, the dog, the women that have husbands that's in the dog, and Al-Anon and Alateen and now Narnon and all that. I was 37 years old, but I was honking and sniffing. I was honking and sniffing all the time. But it was taught to me that that's not proper. So I try to be as proper as I possibly can. Now, all the other things, the steps, the traditions, one way or the other, I've tweaked them over the years through my life, not followed them correctly. But I don't do it as often or as severe as I used to, which means that's growth. I don't look back. I stay in the trench. I don't want to do anything else. I don't need any big deals in my life. If I can stay sober and clean and carry the message of hope to other people that want this deal, that's all I care about. That's my life. And that's good enough for me. I don't need anything else. I got a little pension Social Security thing. That's fine. I will say this. Keith wanted me to, he mentioned this, so I got to back up again. I'm going forward and backing up, I guess. I had 4 or 5 years sober, and I was riding my motorcycle in Anaheim, and a guy ran a red light and broadsided me, crushed my lower left leg. Come to find out after the police got there and all that stuff, I flew 27 feet. That was before the helmet law. I flew 27 feet and didn't hit my head because I tucked up in a ball. But anyway, through that accident, I found that there was a vice president of Nikon Cameras, the one that hit me, to run a red light in a company car. So I got some money. I got a lot of money. And, of course, I did what lots of us do. I bought three motorcycles. I bought one stock motorcycle and had two made, custom made, one and restored an old one. And I bought me a 64 Buick Riviera, dropped it to the ground, slammed it to the ground. Thank you. And thank you. And a Silverado pickup truck. So I had best of all worlds. And my parents were getting old. My dad had retired, and he wasn't getting a lot of money. And I put my parents through hell. And so I decided, without saying anything to Keith, I decided that for the rest of their life, I was going to make it as easy for them as I possibly can. I paid their, they didn't have a house. They rented a house. I paid their rent, their lights. I bought my father. He worked for Ford Motor Company before he retired. I bought him a brand new Thunderbird of that year, 88 or 89, whatever it was. Bought him a brand new Thunderbird, and I just took care of him. I bought their grave sites and all that stuff. And I'm doing my job, traveling all over the United States. And when I was in between jobs, maybe 10 days I'd be home here in California. I'd come back to my parents' house and visit with them and all that stuff. And it stayed that way. My mom died first of cancer. And I took 4 months off work, period, and I stayed with my mother and my father the last 4 months of her life. And then I went back to work, and then my father got sick, and I came back and did the same for him. That was my amends for the way I had treated him for all them years. I fell in love. I met a sweet, fine, flat-bellied female that had 18 months. She had 18 months clean and sober. I met her the day she got out of the penitentiary. Yeah. I knew I was in. I got some here. Thank you. Yeah. I knew I was in. And asked her if she wanted to go for a ride on that Harley, and she said, yeah, and that was it. In a way, we stayed together 9 years. I left California. Her family was from Kentucky, and she had been down quite a long time, and she hadn't seen her mom in 12 or 13 years. She was a meth head, cooker, scientist, and so we went back there to visit her family, and introduced me to her family. I was clean. I was doing the right thing, going to meetings and everything. I had her parole transferred from Orange County. At the time, I had 40 acres right up here in Anza. And I got her transferred to Riverside parole. She got off parole. Anyway, we got a travel permit, went back to Kentucky. I fell in love. It's all green. It wasn't the winter time. If it had been the winter time, I wouldn't have stayed there. I fell in love. It was green and clean air, no traffic jams. Everybody looked at me funny because I had big bells on. Back then we wore, ride our Harleys, we had them big bells on. And they looked at me funny because I'm all tacked back and, you know, this city boy as far as them rednecks was concerned. So I came back here to California and closed out my stuff. It moved back to Pikeville, Kentucky, which is right on the Virginia, right by Wise, Virginia, in that area. And nothing got better. I continued working, traveling. We never got married. We just lived together. Continued doing my job. And about a year before we split up, before I walked away, I come home from a job. Been gone about 5.5 months. Excuse me, come home from a job, and there was empty beer bottles and paraphernalia on my nightstand on my side of the bed. And we had an agreement from the gate out front that if this happened, either her or me, the other one would leave. And I tried to get her. I said, I'll put you in rehab. You can do it. And her attitude was, well, I only drink a little bit on the weekend, smoke a little marijuana maintenance, and I'm fine. I'm not back into meth and all that stuff. Well, needless to say, it got worse. There was a guy in Kentucky called Mad Mike. You may know Mad Mike, originally from San Diego. Mad Mike was a guy I was talking to a lot. He had 24 or 25 years at that time. And I told him what was going on. He says, you got to walk, Joe. Because I told him, and I meant it, I was uncomfortable in my own house. So I told her, I said, look, if you want to go into rehab, then I'm leaving. And she would go ahead. So I left her there. Give her the house, left her the house. The house payment, I put so much money down, the house payment was only $110 a month. Yeah. And the tax, the property tax a year was, I don't know, $237, something like that. Nothing. Anyway, I packed my stereo system up and all my clothes. Didn't have the three bikes no more. But I still had the truck. Put them in my truck and went to Mesa, Arizona. And that was it. 4 months later, I had heard she lost the house. All the windows was busted out of it. You know, she had whatever she was doing. Anyway, so I've been through a pretty serious relationship. I've been through two deaths, actually three. I just buried my brother 4 months ago. My kid brother died of this disease 4 months ago. I came back here to California to bury him. And he was raised with me in the program. Some get it and some don't. You know, I once again, I was helpless. And so I've been through a lot of pain, but I've not used or drank. And I've been able to share that with my sponsor or other people in the program. My youngest son, I have three grandbabies, three granddaughters. The oldest one's 14. I got to get them right or they'll be mad. 11, 8. Oh, I got four grandkids. Chance, the last one, he's about 3 years old right now. I got three girls and one boy. And my youngest son said, Dad, why don't you retire? Why don't you come to Vegas and stay with us? They had a big house, five-bedroom home in Summerlin. Why don't you come stay with us and watch your grandkids grow? I said, okay. So I did that. I came to Las Vegas And one thing led to another. I got a little job and, cause they needed help. My youngest son worked there and needed help. So anyway, I got into that. And, then my youngest son started drinking again, you know, wanting one or two beers after work. He earned it. You know what I mean? And, I deserve it. That's how it started. And then we all know what happens from there. Got worse. Him and his wife. Arguing and fighting. I said, I gotta go. And, so I left him. I left my son and my daughter-in-law and my grandkids. I didn't leave Vegas, but I got offered a job as managing a recovery home, clean and sober living in Las Vegas. And, so I go to meetings every day. I have a home group in Las Vegas called the Not High at Noon Group. Many of you have been back there and supported us. We appreciate that. I really appreciate it. And I manage this recovery home. It's the only co-ed. Check that out. From me. I was a meteor before I got here as far as women were concerned. I managed the only women or men and women's co-ed house in Las Vegas. And I don't stand for no hanky-pank, and I don't do none of it. And that's a big change from where I come from. Man, I'm getting nervous here. About time. Anyway, the director of the Factor House, that's what it's called because it's on Factor Avenue. So, sound like a good name, huh? Factor Avenue, Factor House. Him and his wife moved back to Tennessee. So I became the director of Factor House. And it's been growing and staying busy ever since. Some days I call Keith and tell him, man, oh, man, this is going on, that's going on. He said, Joe, take a deep breath. Relax. People are going to be people. You know, and that's not what I want to hear. You know, I want to pat on the poo-poo, too. You should keep going. You're doing the right thing. And inevitably, that's what happens. But I need that old attaboy shot once in a while. And so I just keep doing what I'm doing. And I know if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to keep getting what I'm getting. And I like what I'm getting today much better than I was getting before 1983. I'll close in 1 second. I want to read this poem to you. This means something to me. I hope, let me find my glasses. What'd you do with my glasses, Nate? I got them. It's called If One Day. If one day you feel like crying, call me. I don't promise that I will make you laugh, but I can cry with you. If one day you run away, don't be afraid to call me. I don't promise to ask you to stop, but I can run with you. If one day you don't want to listen to anyone, call me. I promise to be there for you, and I will be very quiet. If I ever ignored you, you have my permission to get in my face. If I ever put you down or acted like I was better than you, hug me, please. But if one day you call and there's no answer, come fast and find me. Maybe I need you. Don't ever forget that. Through the bad times and good, we have each other. I'm writing this because what if tomorrow never comes? What if I never get to say goodbye or tell you I love you? It tears me up every time I read this, but it's so good, man. What if I never get to tell you how much you have made it possible for me to be alive today? You have touched my heart in a way that no one else could. And for that, I am grateful. Thank you.